Welcome to the Good Life EDU podcast presented by the Nebraska ESU Coordinating Council. I'm your host, Andrew Easton. Thanks for joining us as we discuss the latest in digital learning across Nebraska and around the country. All right, I'd like to welcome everybody back for another episode of the Good Life EDU podcast. And I'm joined today by KK Nyman, who is the National Director of District and Strategic Initiatives at World Savvy. And so I'm really grateful that KK has taken some time to connect, as I was hopeful to get someone from World Savvy on the podcast when I first got a chance to learn about World Savvy at this year's AESA conference, which took place in December. So having made some connections there, have followed up. We've had conversations with our ESU cooperative purchasing about seeing what it might look like for us to partner with World Savvy, to be announced as to where that goes. But just let everyone that's listening to the podcast know that we certainly have connected and are grateful to KK for taking a little bit of time to share about World Savvy today on the podcast. And so welcome to the Good Life EDU.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and when we got to speak actually in a meeting leading up to this, you're giving me your backstory, kind of in education and working through the different roles within World Savvy. And so could you share with everybody else? I think it's really neat and helps kind of conceptualize a little bit of what World Savvy does through just even understanding your experiences through it.
Sure. So I was a new teacher, brand new teacher, just when World Savvy was founded in 2002. And so from the very beginning, I was involved in paying attention to them as an organization. Throughout the last 22 plus years, I've done a lot of things for them. If I was in the classroom, I've done some consulting. I've been a volunteer at plenty of their numerous events. I have done teacher trainings while I was in the classroom, but I have also been a full-time staffer at other points. I helped to open the Minnesota office in 2010, and I ran one of their sort of premier youth engagement programs that World Savvy had them. But then I went back to the classroom, and I got to be, I would say, sort of for the first time, a real World Savvy teacher, because I was teaching in a city where there was an office, so I really got to benefit from that. And so I was in World Savvy, my students were there, and I just came back to World Savvy full time 2.5 years ago. And what really prompted that is I taught through the pandemic, which was terrible. And yeah, it was really hard. And it is something I am very grateful for, that experience. But at the same time, it was really hard. And I felt, though, like I weathered that a little easier than some of my colleagues. And I attributed that to my work with World Savvy, that the way that I had grown as a teacher and the shifts that I made in my own practice made it easier for me to adapt to that overnight change that we all had to do. And my students were more adaptable as well, because the culture that we built in our sort of in-person classroom really led and continue to exist in our Zoom classrooms. And so after that experience, I started to think about how much I'd love to go back and support other teachers and school leaders. And so that's how I got back here.
Well, thanks for sharing that overview. And I, as someone who also taught through some of those remote situations, you're right, it was a very challenging time. So certainly empathize with that. And for folks that are not familiar with World Savvy at all, can you maybe zoom out 30,000 feet and say, okay, as kind of vision and mission for World Savvy, what are you all about?
So we are a national education nonprofit. So we do work all across the country. And we create partnerships with schools and educators and districts in the hopes that together inside our communities, we can reimagine education for the 21st century. We think a lot about how the world has changed so much, not just in the 22 years that we've been operating, but in the decades leading up to that. And the truth is that in that time, schools kind of fundamentally look the way that they always have. So they're not keeping pace with what's happening outside of schools. And we are really hoping to work with school leaders and teachers so that we can create future ready classrooms that are able to adapt more quickly to a changing world and prepare kids for life in an ever-changing world. One of the statistics that I spend a lot of time thinking about comes from the World Economic Forum. And while this is a really hard thing to quantify, They are estimating that 85% of today's grade schoolers will hold jobs that don't exist yet. And that is a statistic I think a lot about because it does mean that we are now preparing kids for a world and we have no idea what it will look like when they walk out into it. And so if we don't know exactly what we're preparing them for, then we have to think about what school needs to be so that kids have the skills and dispositions to navigate all of that change and that they themselves can adapt as the economy changes, as their communities change, and as we seek to address the global challenges that we face. So for us, we think a lot about what a relevant education can and should look like and how we can put kids out into the world who are uniquely prepared for this life of unpredictability.
Yeah, and would you say, before we really maybe dive into kind of specific practices and the carrying out of that future-ready classroom, to specific skills, perhaps, I do think that it's worth highlighting that World Savvy's, as you said, 22 years, which there are a number of companies that are, I'm sure, terrific as well that have been around a year or a couple of years. So I'm not trying to, but that kind of staying power and that kind of history that has been built upon over time certainly teaches you lessons and gives you insights. And that sustainability kind of speak to that, I guess, as you, because on the one hand, I'm sure things have changed, but on the other, I'm sure that it's been nice to bring that wealth of experiences to the collaborations that you're having currently.
Absolutely. It's one of the things I'm most proud of about World Savvy is that we live the mission that we are trying to instill. We are absolutely a learning organization. As you point out, in over 2 decades of work, what we're doing right now does not look like what we did in 2002 in Oakland, California, when we were just getting started. And there's a very good reason for that because we have learned all along the way. And the one thing that has never changed is our actual mission and vision. And so we are always asking ourselves if our goal is to really transform K-12 education and to think about what it takes to change the conversation about what a quality education looks like, then we're always evaluating our programs through that lens. So we started off actually working directly with youth, which I think was an incredibly valuable place for us to start. So it started as after-school programs, coming inside a school where a school would let us teach like one class on global studies to kids. We were very content-focused. It started from this place of kids in the US need to learn about other places in the world, and they need to feel a connection to other places in the world. So it was way more sort of knowledge-centered and geographically centered. And then, as we started doing that work, we grew into project-based learning and helping teachers to do and create these experiences with their kids. And we ourselves ran this amazing youth event called the World Savvy Challenge. And we would support teachers to do projects inside their schools. And then at the end of the year, kids would come to this huge event. They get to share their projects. We had a part of the day where they're collaborating with kids from other schools. We would have fun speakers, and it was a really wonderful day. And I got to participate in that as a volunteer, as a teacher in their programs. I got to run that program here in the Twin Cities. It really was great, and people loved it. But I mentioned that because we don't do it anymore. And the reason we don't is because as we got into COVID and everyone was rethinking what education would look like, we did the same thing and we used it as an opportunity to reimagine ourselves and to look out at the field and try to identify what is really going to help us, what is going to help us move the needle, and what does education need right now. And so we came out of the pandemic actually building on all the years a new approach to what it would look like to partner with us. And it's going really well. We're getting great feedback from our school partners. It's a lot of fun, but it feels good to know that we're learning just along with everyone else. And we are very committed to being sure that our work is as impactful as it can be.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, as you shared there then, coming out of some of the pandemic scenarios, what were some of those central tenets, I guess? I think you gave there really the impetus for those shifts. But maybe saying what those are at this current time that are driving the work.
Sure. So over the years, we've honed in on four principles that really guide our work to support schools to embed global competence into teaching, learning, and school culture. The first one is cultivating connections. And this is actually serves as the first year of our school partnerships. And the idea around this principle is it really leans into the elements of our global competence matrix that speak to how we connect and interact with one another. And we start our work this way because we have found, and there's a lot of research to support this too, that kids need to feel connected to something in order to do some of that harder, heavy lifting thinking that we want them to be doing. So we talk a lot in our first year about what it means to build a really solid and supportive and inclusive classroom culture and culture inside a building, and how teachers can both cultivate connections with their students, but also support students to cultivate connections with one another. And so that's a really big part of our work. And so we lean into how we are listening, how we are practicing empathy, how we are demonstrating humility, how we are choosing the appropriate tools to communicate, how we are seeking out multiple perspectives and understanding them. The second tenet is learning through inquiry. And that's also our second year, this idea of how can we create learning experiences that work to center student interests and lived experience? And then how can we develop the skills and habits of someone who is constantly inundated with information, but knows how to sift through it, take it in, think about it, ask the right questions, and continue to ask questions to learn more and more. And so the inquiry process is really important to being globally competent. And I would say one of the biggest skills and dispositions that gets talked about that teachers tend to latch onto the most comes from our matrix, and it says forms opinions based on fact and exploration, and exploration and evidence. And we always talk about how that phrase is worded very specifically, because when I was young, I graduated from high school 30 plus years ago now. And when I was young and teachers were the gatekeepers of information and there was no internet and it was harder to get your hands on stuff, then I heard a lot, and maybe you did too, which is like, you have to support your thinking with evidence. And that was a fine thing to say back then because it was harder to find evidence. And so it didn't feel like if I was coming across evidence or information, that was kind of helping me think about like the ideas that I had, but it wasn't as easy to just find the evidence that supported what you wanted to think. And now it is. If I want to find evidence on the internet to support anything, I can find it. And so it really does require a shift in thinking to say, it's not finding evidence to support my ideas, it's forming my ideas based on the evidence that I'm seeing. And so that's a really big part of our inquiry process. The third principle is fostering knowledge to action. We think a lot about how we really want young people to understand what informed action looks like, so that when they care about something in their communities, locally or globally, they have a framework to fall back on about what it means to try to take informed action on those things. And so we do a lot of support through project-based learning and our framework to give kids the opportunities to practice these skills over and over again. How do you think about stakeholder perspectives? What does it mean to find those perspectives? How can we think creatively about solutions? So that is a third principle. And we think that's important, not just because we want kids to graduate with the skills to tackle some of our serious challenges we're facing, but it's also a way you can't talk to kids about the world and ask them to engage in the world without also empowering them to make changes in that world. It can be very sad and depressing for kids sometimes to learn about what's happening if they don't also feel like they have the ability to change what they're seeing if they don't like it. And then the fourth principle is reflect and adapt. And that one actually carries through everything that we do. As you probably just heard in the brief history I gave you of World Savvy, we are always reflecting and adapting. And so that's a really big part of being a teacher or school leader in our programs, but also something we want to instill in kids that to be a lifelong learner, you have to constantly be reflecting and adapting on what you're doing, what you're thinking, and you have to always be willing to change because that's the one constant that we can promise them is that they're going to be navigating a lot of change. And so, how can we get comfortable with that?
Very much on a personal level, I love all of these and I'm making connections to things like engagement. I do feel things like social connections, emotional connections, and the actual like act of taking action all are just representative of that. And so, I think that's sort of layered in there, maybe with some terminology that folks might be familiar with. And so I guess maybe our next step would be to say we have the why, we have the how, according to these four principles. Before we get to the what this looks like and we get maybe examples, where does this meet the classroom experience? So I'm gonna go to a where that I think maybe is a part of the in between, so that within the rhythms of the school day, when does world savvy experiences and learning opportunities meet students typically?
So, we would like to say ideally everywhere inside a building. When we think about a world savvy school, and I'm on a podcast, so no one can see that I was just making quotes with my hands because it's not like technically a world savvy school. But when we think about a school that is embedding global competence into teaching, learning, and school culture, you should feel it everywhere. You should feel it in the classroom as students feel like they are seen and valued, like their lived experiences are being elevated and acknowledged, that they get to have some choice over the content that they are looking at, that they can explore things that they are fired up about, that is really piquing their interest, and that they get to start to feel like they are part of something bigger than themselves. We want them to feel a connection to each other and to their teachers and to their communities locally. And we also want them to feel like it's not just about them. It's about being part of something even larger and how we can cultivate that feeling. And I do think there's ways that you do that through the practices that you have inside a school, what's on the wall, how people talk to each other, what the norms are. There's lots of ways that we work with schools to be sure that these things are being lived in real ways throughout the day. It is, though, a really great question. And again, something we've been getting better and better at every year, which is when we started off thinking about what we hoped education would be, I do feel like it was a little more sort of in the clouds. And as we were working with students and then started to work closely with teachers and so on, now one of the things we really pride ourselves on is we aren't just living in theory. We're not just talking to you about what happens up here, like the ideas that happen up here, but all of our program team are educators with a lot of experience. And so we know about the Monday problem. What do I do when I walk into the classroom on Monday? And we have that. We will always say, try this thing. And so it's really important to have time and space for educators and school leaders to think about the future and to really imagine the kind of education system that they want to emerge. And we have to also think about the day-to-day. And that is what we do inside our school partnerships through ongoing professional learning and one-to-one coaching.
So maybe as a part of that, whether it's through meeting with leadership teams or cohorts or entire staff, sort of that vision setting and establishing those definitive characteristics of the culture collectively guided by your experience with these principles that we've talked about to this point. Is that fair? Am I crafting that in a way, and it's flexible maybe in a way that suits the school's
Yes.
needs?
So one of the things I say that I always make clear to anyone when I'm speaking with them is that we are not a training and we are not a curriculum. So if you're looking for me to just come in and tell you how to do something, that's not what we do. What we really aim to do is to create that time and space for when we're working with districts, like on our district side. So when we're working with school leaders, giving them the time and space to really think about the changes that they want to happen, what is going to make the most sense for their own community, and then how are they going to go about starting to initiate that change? How are they going to work to unleash the creativity of their teachers and students and community members. Then on the other side, we also partner inside schools with educators. And so same thing when we're working with them, it's not about a specific curriculum or teaching a particular content because we work across every content and grade level. It's really about you have to do these things and we're going to support you to think creatively about how we can use that content as the vehicle to develop these skills and dispositions. And what does it look like to teach these things with real intention? And then just like we care about reflecting and adapting, how do you give constant feedback to students so that they can continue to grow in these areas? So I always say, and it sounds cliche, but there is no one way to do global competence. Every community is different. And so we work really hard to not treat teachers and schools the way that I think we treat students, which is generally saying that students all get to the same place at the same time and that there's one direction that everyone should go in. We do try and work really hard to honor that every community has different needs. And it's really important that this work come from them, that they get to decide with all their stakeholders what this is going to look like and how they're going to commit to it.
It's tough because I want to ask next for examples, but understanding the creative process and everything that you just shared there as well, the second you start to give examples, you really narrow things to a place that doesn't give the breadth of openness, I guess, that you shared a moment ago. It's due space. And so I'm at this kind of like rub there, I guess, where if you could maybe share some of the stories of what people have done within the space and maybe show the differences between those, it might accomplish both. Is that fair, KK? I don't want to pin you in.
Yes. No, so I can speak to, so we have one school that is a K-8 that we have been partnering. They're actually in their third year of their partnership with us. So they've actually gone through cultivating connections, inquiry, and now they're doing knowledge to action. And it's really a wonderful place. Some of the ways that I would say they have worked hard to embed global competence is, and this is just a small example, but they have these various rubrics that we have worked with them to create, and then they have these cards. And so, for instance, on conference day, when families and caregivers come in, the kids actually have these out and they can share them. They can talk about a specific skill or disposition. And then they explain to their families how they're working on that or what it looked like for them to do that. So they've been working really hard to make sure that this is language that is also in the vernacular of their families and caregivers. And we've been helping to support them with that work. Another example that I really love from that school, just about how teachers have leaned into this, is because it's a K-8, the middle schoolers, you know, you have eighth graders next to fifth graders, and there's a really big difference between an eighth grader and a fifth grader. And the students came to one of their teachers, the fifth graders, and said that they were really annoyed because the eighth graders were loud and messy in the halls. And so the teachers really jumped at that opportunity to turn this into an inquiry project where the kids had to form groups. They created a plan for them to gather information about what they needed to understand. So the fifth graders surveyed the eighth graders to figure out why they were so messy and what was happening in the hall. They surveyed another group, were surveying people to see what they wanted the halls to look like. So they spent all this time gathering information, then they developed some solutions for how they wanted the halls to operate, and then they presented to the eighth graders, and they hung art. Like, it was, the teacher needed to practice certain writing in class, and she used this as an opportunity to do that. So again, that's one specific example to that particular school, but it was really great for everyone, and her kids were learning and practicing just what they needed to about something that they felt really passionate about. Another school that we partnered with actually came into the work a little differently. And this is an example of how, like, we have a way that we do things, but we really do like to partner with schools to figure out what they really need. And this particular school district started by having us work with their eighth grade teachers on a capstone middle school project. And then once that project was designed and implemented in the first year, now we're coaching all of the middle school teachers and partnering as we think about preparing everyone for that capstone, that like this school experience should lead to contributing to this successful project that will happen in the spring of their eighth grade year. So I hope those two examples give you a little bit of like what it looks like inside school, but also just the impact of the coaching. It's sort of a shared learning experience, individual coaching, shared learning experience, individual coaching throughout the year, going back and forth between those things. And we've definitely found that that is the most helpful in really providing the necessary support that teachers need to start thinking of shifting their practice.
Wow, I feel like we could go in depth on each of those examples. They were so fun to learn about. I make connections under my own roof as starting in August, at least I'll have an eighth grader and a fifth grader at home. And so I totally get that dynamic and how amazing to turn what may have otherwise just been a verbal or worse conflict into a teachable moment that really is reflective of the values and the culture that you want to establish through some of the supports that you've mentioned there. And then I do want to ask about the capstone too, then just the classroom teacher nerdiness in me. But with those capstone projects, are those things that students arrive at a focus that they feel passionate about? Or is that, maybe give a little more to that just because I'm curious.
For this particular capstone, we worked with there was a lead teacher, and the focus, it really started on the sustainable development goals. These global goals are something we use a lot in our work, and they are an amazing entry point for an inquiry process. Just as a quick overview, the sustainable development goals were created in 2015. They are a series of 17 objectives that the whole world has committed to. They include things like ending poverty, zero hunger, quality education, peace and justice, thinking about climate change, ocean health, all kinds of things. And so as an entry point, it can cover and be applicable to almost every subject matter. And having used them a lot with my own students, every kid can find something in that list of 17 that they really want to learn more about. And so in this particular project, kids got to start with the SDGs. They worked in groups. They honed in on one that they wanted to really look at. And then within each of them, there are lots of sub bullets and topics that kids can explore. So kids were doing projects on the support that refugees need when they come to a new community, or thinking of designing sustainable cities. So there's a wide range of topics, but the point of this project was really, again, the SDGs were just the topic. The goal was to practice very specific skills, collaborating, communicating, what it really means to be curious and engage in an inquiry process. It's also really important that we give students an opportunity to find comfort with complexity. We live in a world that feels way more comfortable with easy answers, that is right and that is wrong, when the truth is, the truth exists in multitudes, and we do need young people to be able to hold multiple truths at one time. That yes, if you're looking at poverty, that yes, sometimes aid creates dependency and can destroy local economies, and sometimes aid can save somebody's life and change the trajectory of that community. Both of those things can exist at the same time. So projects like this are also designed for kids to live in that space so that they learn and expect that there are no easy answers.
Wow. Sounds like a classroom I'd want to be a part of, is having the opportunity to lean into those conversations, as you said, in eighth grade, right? And what that means for how you then would grow into being a teenager and an adult who sees the world, as you mentioned before, as a place where you can take action and have an impact. And that agency piece obviously seems prevalent in that example. And I feel like I've been indulging my own curiosities here, KK. So I'm going to give you a little space to maybe take this next bit wherever you'd like for us to go. What have I not asked, or what is something, I guess, maybe worth highlighting that we've not had the opportunity to touch upon?
That's a good question. You've asked a lot of good questions. I've gotten to really explain a lot about what we do. I guess I would say that just like we want kids to understand what it means to live in a complex and ever-changing world, and that they need the skills and dispositions to do that, it is also something that every adult inside our education system also has to embrace. And this is teachers and school leaders and families and caregivers. There are no easy answers to a lot of the challenges that we face. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that we are making is assuming that there is a silver bullet, that there's one thing that a school community can do, and that doesn't exist. At World Savvy, we talk a lot about how school transformation isn't about the handful of big moves. It's the thousands of small moves that are working together towards a common goal. And so taking that on and thinking about what that means does require a shift in how we usually are thinking in education. It requires us to ask different questions about what a quality education looks like. And those aren't easy questions to ask ourselves sometimes. And it's hard sometimes to be in a community and be the one asking the questions and, you know, getting that pushback. We do find that our school leaders and our teachers, the ones who are trying to ask the hard questions, who are pushing in a different direction, they feel pretty isolated. And we like to think that we can find and support those folks and help them connect to with other people who are asking those questions, because it really is going to take everyone. So we definitely think of it, it's a movement that we're trying to start. And we do see ourselves as capacity builders. We don't want to be anywhere in perpetuity, nor do I think that we fundamentally transform a school in 3 years necessarily. I've been doing this a really long time. And if you looked at my classroom in 2021 and compared it to my classroom in 2001, it would look like this huge 180. And it would look like that if you were looking at those two bookends, except that that change happened over 2 decades worth of work. It's 2 decades of trying and failing and trying and failing. And every time I tried something new, it would push me to think about something else new. And then I would make the shift there. And that's how it works. And so what we really hope to do is to build the energy and capacity for that to get started and for schools to sustain that, so that teachers do feel empowered to be creative and to always be adapting their practices, and that we find comfort with families and caregivers in that space too. I do get it. I am a parent, and parents are just, they're sending their kids to school and they really just want their teachers to like their kids and to see the wonderful things in them. And they worry for them. They worry about their future and they want them to be okay. And I do also think that we could go a long way if we start to make this a conversation that we're all having together. We don't ever want anyone to feel like something is being done to them, that instead communities can come together and start to reimagine education because that's what's best for their kid. So again, there's not like one way to do anything, and it is complicated and complex at the same time. But it's a space I definitely enjoy working in, and it's inspiring to me as someone who works on the district side, and I get to talk to a lot of school leaders, and it's really inspiring for me to hear what folks are trying to do. And I feel hopeful, more hopeful than I think some other people do when they think about education. So, but I'd like to think that there are some really amazing and positive changes coming.
Well, and as you talk about those complexities and certainly the barriers that inevitably are going to present themselves in the path from the present reality to the future change that you hope to enact, it is great to have someone with experience to be there to support you. And so World Savvy, obviously, providing that kind of support is invaluable. So for folks that are interested in connecting and learning more, where would you point them to if they would like to maybe reach out?
So I'd start with our website. It's worldsavvy.org. And it's really great. We've been working on it a long time. That's why I'm excited to tell you to go to our website. It has a lot of information about the various programs that we offer for schools, for districts. And then we also have one community-based program. We do our Changemaker Hubs, which is actually the event that is direct work with students, where we invite students together with community members to have a conversation about what the future of teaching and learning could look like. So if you go to our website, you'll be able to see all that information. And the best thing to do is to contact someone at our org. And then while we do work nationally, mine's a national position, we also have regional offices. So we have a Midwest, East, and a West. So depending on where you are, someone will reach out and we would love to have a conversation. There are definitely certain states where we are working, but some of those came to us completely on accident. And then we got the one contact and now, you know, we have more partnerships in that area. So we really love being connected with people from all over.
Well, hopefully through the podcast today, this will provide opportunities for more folks to reach out, to connect. As I mentioned, Anne is our regional Midwest rep. And so she's been someone I really appreciated getting the chance to know and learn from. And so, KK, thank you so much for today's conversation. I say it every week, but 30 minutes goes really fast. And so I'm really grateful that we had the opportunity to learn more. And maybe a parting message, I guess. I feel like so much of what you shared was inspirational and informative, but maybe a note to close on.
I guess I would just say that we have a pretty awesome task. We, meaning those of us in education and really everyone involved. There's the pressure of dealing with the now. We have to meet students where they are now, and we have to support and understand where they are right now. And we have to think about how we prepare them for tomorrow. And there are some amazing, exciting opportunities that come with wrestling with how to do both of those things, but it is something that's going to happen collaboratively. And it's not enough to just one teacher change their room or one school. We really have to connect and work together and make sure that we're creating a network of people who are doing this work.
Thank you so much for sharing today and for being in that space on a regular basis and for 22 years. That's really incredible. So grateful for your time and for you to advocate on the show today. So thanks a lot, KK. We'll be sure to keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks a lot.